Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and we've got a great show for you tonight. As always, we're going to be starting off with Coach's Corner, and I'm going to bring out the panel here in just a moment or two. And a little bit later on, I'm going to be joined by my very special guest tonight, Chris Rodell. He's an author and writer of a new book called Arnold Palmer, Homespun Stories of the King, from La Trobe, Pennsylvania, Arnold's hometown. He's going to be talking with us a little bit later on in the show about some of the great interviews that he did with many of the residents of La Trobe, Pennsylvania, which, of course, is where Arnold Palmer was from and still held a residence there in his hometown. So we're going to talk about that book. But I've got a great show for you tonight. Let me just remind everybody, of course, we are live every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Central here on the network. Best way to find us is go to blogtalkradio.com/Golf Talk Live, or just simply type Golf Talk Live up in the search key, and you'll find us there front and center every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Central. For some reason, if you can't join us live, not to worry. Just scroll down the page, and you'll see the on-demand section, and all of the previously aired shows, including tonight, are there in their entirety. You'll find the recorded versions there. You can also listen on some of the other great social media platforms like iTunes.com, Stitcher.com, and, of course, this year, TuneIn.com. It's been added as well. Again, just type in Golf Talk Live on any of those social media platforms, and, again, we'll be front and center right there, and you can listen on those platforms. Also, if you want to get updates on the show, you can go to the Facebook page. You can go to my personal page, which is Ted Oderico, and it's O-D-O. R-I-C-O is the correct spelling of my last name. You'll see updates there. Or you can go to facebook.com/Golf Talk Live blog. Make sure you have blog on the end there. I update on that page as well as many others on Facebook as well. You can also go to my personal page on linkedin.com and find updates there. And you can also follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Ted and Buck, CEO. CEO is in capital letters. And again, thank you as always for some of the recent followers on Twitter. So lots of great ways to stay connected with the show. I hope you'll tune in tonight. We've got a great discussion for you here on the Coach's Corner panel, a little bit different than what we normally do, but I think it's a well-needed discussion, and I think you're going to get some very useful information, especially from tonight's panel. So let me just introduce them, and then we'll get right into our discussion. Again, I'm very excited with tonight's Coach's Corner panel. First and foremost, John Hughes, a PGA Master Professional and President of the North Florida PGA Section, and the 2013 PGA of America Horton Smith Recipient Award, and also a top 30 instructor with Golf Tips Magazine. John, unfortunately, had some difficulty last time and wasn't able to continue the show, but we're glad everything's worked out and he's back with us this week. Also, equally excited to have on the panel is Peter Egazarian. He's a PGA and TPI teaching professional with Draconic Golf Club, and he's also the head men's golf coach with the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, and also founder of Northeast Golf Performance and a member of the Proponent Group. Also, super excited to have this young lady on the panel as well, Alicia Larson. She's a Class A LPGA teacher professional and founder and president of Gratitude Golf, and she's also an author of The Missing Link, The Powerful Role of Self-Talk in the Mind Game of Golf, and coaches literally every golfer from the beginner, intermediate, right up to the advanced players. Guys, welcome to Coach's Corner panel.
Hi,
Thank
Ted.
You.
Thanks for
Glad
having
me. Glad to be
here. Great to be here.
All right. All right. Well, thanks, guys. And as I very quickly alluded to just before we went live, and I apologize, I didn't get a little bit more chance to explain everything. But what we're going to talk about here is, you know, I always like to, I think, foster discussions that I feel are important. I love this game, as I know all of you do, and especially a lot of our listeners out there and our fellow teacher professionals. But every once in a while, we have to sort of take a hard look at our industry and see if there's things that we can be doing better to improve not just the level of instruction that we provide, but just the overall experience that our students and our fellow golf enthusiasts are going to experience in their journey learning this game. So one of the reasons I wanted to have this discussion tonight, we're talking about here is the decline in golf. It's been no secret. It's not something that the curtain has been drawn back and nobody's aware of. There has been a noticeable decline in golf, and there's a number of factors. We're going to talk about some of them tonight here, but we're also going to talk about some things that we're doing as professionals on our side to try and ramp things back up, but also to, again, provide some top-quality instruction and an overall enjoyable experience with our students and members and so forth. But I want to talk about this. So I'm going to read something from – this was a Washington Post article that was actually dated back March 5th in 2015. I'm going to read a little bit about it. And then if you don't mind, John, I'm going to start with you, and then we'll go to Peter and then Alicia, and then I'll flip the order around as we go here. And the gentleman that wrote this article was Drew Harwell, and the title of the article was actually Why America Fell Out of Love with Golf. It's a very interesting article, and there's some interesting points in here. So let me just read a little bit here, and then we're going to get right into some discussion about it. A decade ago, when the golf course was de facto a playground for the professional set and a young Californian named Tiger Woods was the world's best player, golf looked like an unassailable national undertaking, and corporate players were chomping at the bit to get in. But the business behind one of America's most slow-going, expensive, and old-fashioned pastimes has rapidly begun to fall apart. TaylorMade Adidas Golf, the world's biggest maker of golf clubs and clothes, saw sales nosedive. And this is, of course, keeping in mind this is back in 2015 when this article was written. Nosedive 28% the previous year. Its parent company, Adidas, said Thursday a decline in the number of active players caused an immense problems in the entire industry. And as a market leader, of course, we're talking about Adidas and TaylorMade. This hit them particularly hard. Adidas Chief Executive Officer Herbert Hainer said on a call with analysts, the sporting goods giant has taken some painful measures to restructure and stabilize its golf division. Hainer said, including listing its slow-selling golf gear at deep discounts and postponing new launches. The coming years, Hainer had previously warned, present even more significant negative headwinds for the game. So my question, John, we're going to start here with the equipment side a little bit, and then we're going to talk about instruction as well. In your opinion, and again, this is just a discussion. We're not here to you know, solve all the world's problems. From the equipment side of things, has the industry maybe made some mistakes in rolling out equipment every year at a higher cost for so long that people just became somewhat disgruntled a little bit and maybe felt that because they weren't seeing the results that they were being promised, they felt a little misled, and that's also been part of the cause why sales have slumped. What's your opinion there?
Undoubtedly, there were mistakes made throughout, I'm going to call it the recessionary years, thinking that golf, for a long time, there was this thought that golf was recession-proof because of the people who played and the amount of money it took to play and so forth. And I think the equipment manufacturers, the soft goods, I think we all made mistakes during that time, and we came to the realization that golf is not recession-proof. It was definitely affected. At that time, that article was written, just to throw some other historical facts, that was the same time that Dick's Sporting Goods / Golf Galaxy laid off over 700 PGA professionals.
Right.
Because of that, that was one of the outcomes from not being able to make those sales because they were so heavily weighted in the big box era industry. The green grass accounts, they were put into positions where if they didn't buy lots of inventory, then they were at a very big disadvantage from a profit margin standpoint of view. So the entire industry got topsy-turvy. And what I'm hearing, I'm just now getting back into, I'm going to say, studying the equipment side. having recently reaffiliated with a brand, and learning from that brand the mistakes they've made, and they've actually come out and said, you know what, we made a lot of mistakes, and we're changing course. The biggest mistake I think the equipment manufacturers made was not necessarily selling something that was going to be that much better, so much as they are all publicly traded and they were all more concerned about taking care of their stockholders, especially during a downtime. If they could show that during a downtime they were doing well, there were dividends to be paid. So a product life cycle went from arguably 2 to 3 years down to 3 to 6 months. So in 18 months, you would be walking through Walmart or Target or Costco or whatever, and there was this $500 driver on sale for $69. And even the rich and famous are going to go to these stores at some point and walk through and see this. And it was more was hurtful. They felt like they had been used. They had been had. It wasn't necessarily on the playing side so much as on the purchase side, that they felt like, hey, you know, we became uneducated and we allowed ourselves to become uneducated because of all this. So I think what we're seeing over the past year and a half, 2 years in particular, from the bigger manufacturers is less inventory. Let the product cycles run their course. Let's not overproduce and force anybody into the corner of buying this tremendous amount of inventory and then having to hold it later on. I think they've learned from their mistakes, and some of them are coming out and saying it was a mistake, and that's a good thing. The ones that are still hiding behind their coattails saying they didn't make any mistakes, they're still making those mistakes now.
Yeah. Well said. And again, you know, I think it's important for all areas in golf, not just the manufacturers, but obviously us as golf teach professionals and coaches, that we really take a hard look at, one, what we're doing in the industry. You know, are we utilizing the resources to the best of our abilities, not just on how we formulate, you know, at the lesson tee, but also are we utilizing the available resources through golf courses? And I'm going to talk about the courses here in just a minute. But I want to read something else very quickly. And then, Peter, I want to get your thoughts here. It says, again, just to sort of continue on with what John said, but we're going to, you know, shift it just slightly here. As I continue with the article, it's been years since the increasingly unpopular sport of golf plunked into the rough, and the industry now realizing that it may not be able to get over it. All the qualities that once made it elite and elusive, exclusive, are, analysts say, now playing against it. The game with its drivers, clubs, shoes, and tee times is expensive both to prepare for and to play. It's difficult, dissuading amateurs from giving it a swing, and time-consuming, limiting how much fans can play. Even what loyalists would say are strengths, its simplicity, its traditionalism, can seem overly austere in an age of fitness classes, extreme races, and iPhone games. So I want to ask you, Peter, from this standpoint, because now we're talking about a couple of things. It's not just the equipment and the fact that, as John just pointed out there, for a long time, you know, it was costing X number of dollars, and now some of these big box stores have come in and have been able to, you know, sell it at a much lower rate. So there's that factor. But also, there's other things that are competing with, you know, many of our consumers' time. Talk a little bit about if that, what you've experienced, what you've seen, and maybe some things that you're personally doing to try to overcome some of the challenges and hurdles that maybe you've come across.
Yeah. I might lose him going for a little bit of a spot here, but they're looking at social change right now. There's a large amount of social change going on right now with people's habits on everything. I think when it comes to equipment and the cost of equipment, the consumer has never been more educated, has never had more options. So if they do have the you don't have to have this large amount of disposable income to begin to play golf anymore.
Right.
From an equipment standpoint, but really when it comes down to it is where the person's attention is. I mean, and I think for just such a long time, the golf industry, you know, thought it was fine. It was, nothing was ever going to change, and everything always changes. And we stopped trying to draw the attention of people in a long-term sense. I think we got very short-sighted in our vision for what golf is going to be, and failed to see a long-term investment in, you know, growing players and making it more, having there be a more organic interest in allowing people to engage in something that was more in line with their own expectations. I think we said, this is golf, take it or leave it. And
right.
I think for the past 10 years, we've paid the price for that. And I'm in a very unique situation at my facility, being on the campus of a college. But the leadership of my club is taking an extremely and has taken an extremely long-term look at golf. And, you know, 12 years ago, introducing a junior stewardship program that's going to, you know, drop if you can fulfill certain requirements, or if you play on your high school golf team, your junior membership is a quarter of the cost if you were not able to fulfill some service requirements or volunteerism, or, you know, simply playing on your high school golf team. And now most recently, they're making a strong movement to have the college students be more involved by, you know, really slashing the cost of a college membership. And I'll tell you what, it's had over the last 2 weeks, you know, over the years I've been here, this is the most amount of college students I've ever seen at the club. It's accessible to them. They want to engage it. They just need a means to do it and have it be available. You talk about technology, you know, kids being in their phone. Yeah, they're in their phone, but they also really, enjoy the open space. And they're going to want to engage their friends and share it. That generation is a sharing generation. They want to show that I'm at my college golf course and I'm doing this, and it's amazing. As well as for a very, very long time, the colleges had a golf elective, and I'm sure most colleges and universities do have this. But it's a little bit of a model for people that are not in the circumstance that I am in at a university course, that you can take something from it and look at things more of a long term than this short term gain. I'm going to grab X amount of dollars from this young person, and I'm never going to see them again after this year because it's unsustainable for that particular person. So I think we missed the boat for an X number of years saying take it or leave it. And I think now, like John said, the equipment companies are admitting some mistakes, and I think we're seeing a little bit of the error of our ways and coming around to the idea of more of the long term.
Right. Well said. Some great points there, Peter. You're right on the money with that. I couldn't concur more with you. I think that, you know, I think the colleges and universities and other areas in the schooling system need to take a much different approach in some ways than perhaps they have over the last decade or so in order to be able to help foster some of the growth. Alicia, I want to bring you obviously now into the conversation as well to get your thoughts in here. And again, I'm going to just read something very briefly here, and then I'll let you respond. To continue on again with the article, even Jack Nicklaus, perhaps one of the greatest, if not the greatest golfer in history, makes a strong argument for why new players aren't flocking to golf. I'd like to play a game that can take place in 3 hours, Nicholas told CNN in January. And again, this is going back in 2015. I'd like to play a game that I can get some reasonable gratification out of very quickly, and some that and something that is not going to cost me an arm and a leg. And just to connect a little bit further, and I want to ask you a question. The number of Americans who said they played golf at least once last year has fallen to one of its lowest points in years. Sports and Fitness Industry Association data show even worse for the sport's future. The number of young people aged 18 to 30 playing the game has sagged nearly 35% over the last decade. So taking that into consideration, you're talking about one of the greatest players acknowledging that golf is taking too long to play. And I know that they've tried to do some things to shorten it. But what are your thoughts there about the time on the golf course? Again, in a society where time has become people's time has become more important, and there's less of it to do certain things like a leisure sport or even a sport like golf that they want to get involved in. And then also it talks about a specific demographic, age 18 to 30, playing this game, that it's dropped 35%. That's over one-third that the interest has dropped or the engagement hasn't dropped. What are your thoughts here, and what do you see as a possible solution? Because obviously to grow this game, we have to get into some of these younger minds, if you will, and convince them that golf is something for them, not just for their grandfather or their parents. What are your thoughts in that area?
Yeah, I guess I have a couple, because I've seen increasingly over the last 4 or 5 years, maybe even just a little bit more, I've seen people or heard people tell me on the lesson tee that they only want to play I just want to play 9 holes. And so that is a very common statement to me. It's like, I don't have time for 18 holes. And so with that being said, it's one of those things where you're trying to keep them on the golf course, and the leagues are more 9 holes now. And so there's not, at the club I was at, there was a 18-hole league for ladies, and there was way more of the 9-hole league than in the 18-hole league. And so I've seen that over and over, and I think that time is a big issue. And they just don't want to spend that much time on the golf course. They don't have the time. They're on to something else. And so for me, it's one of those things where I wish there were more. I love the idea of having, 27 holes where you have the 18 and people want to play 18, but then have 9 holes that somebody, if they just want to play 9, one of the courses has a little par 3 course. So they have the 18 and then 9 of a par 3. And those are very advantageous, I think, to the golfing communities that trying to grow the game. And you see more parents and younger kids going out to play just 9 holes at little par executive courses, par 3s and 4s only. And so I think that's something that maybe needs to have more of that type of scenario and situation for people to have as an option. Regarding the 18 to 30 year olds, my son is in that age, and he just said to me the other night, he's actually 34, but he said, I need to figure out how to make more money. And he's a hardworking blue collar guy that he says, I need to figure out how to make more money, because I want to join a club in the area so that I can take my daughters, my granddaughters there. And he wants to take his daughter there and start playing golf. But, it does cost. I think some clubs have dropped the initiation fees. There's different ways they've tried to stimulate that age group. And, my specific vision and focus recently in the last 5 years is I developed an academy, a golf academy, and the academy was to generate interest and really a passion for golf with young golfers anywhere from, I have kids in my academy that are 11 to 18, 17 and 18. And so I want to develop the passion for the game in that age group so that they'll carry it on. And the greatest compliment you can get is, when I have kids, I'm going to bring my kids back and then you can teach them, so that you've instilled some passion in the game when they think they're already going to teach their kids when they get married and have children. So I'm trying to grow it that way and invest in, different, like in golf, but also in life. And that's a little bit of a spinoff in my book too, that I wanted to try to send that message that we can teach a lot of life values to these people. And if you invest in these kids and then they fall in love with the game, they'll continue to play it. I have kids in the academy that have no desire to get to play college golf, but they really want to play high school golf competitively. And they're so excited about the fact that they can play that game with their fathers, their grandfathers, their family, their friends for as long as they're alive. And I think we have to focus on that aspect. This is probably the only sport you can continue to play and, you know, till you're, you know, well into your 80s, or sometimes even I've seen people who are 90 that have been playing. So there's things about it that could be focused on, I think, that would generate some interest.
Yeah, some excellent points as well, Alicia. Thank you for that. You're exactly right. And I think, you know, again, let me just to sort of back up a little bit here. Really to the purpose of this discussion is really to have this discussion. I think, you know, we can't be so naive in the golf industry, and I know none of you are. I mean, you pointed that out here tonight. But I think there are some that would argue the fact, say, well, you know, golf's not really in decline. It's just an economic slump, and it's going to just jump right back in. But the truth of the matter is, and just to go to the point about, as I mentioned a few moments ago, about golf courses, and again, taking into consideration the timing of this article, that the drop-off has hit America's, and I'm reading from the article, has America's greens and links hard. More golf courses closed than open in 2013 for the eighth straight year, according to the National Golf Foundation. And the number of course closures has sped up, averaging 137 closings every year since 2011. Again, data from a golf industry researcher. So, you know, there's definitely has been a decline in playing, but also it's hit the golf courses as well. There's obviously been some community issues as housing bubble happened a number of years ago. That affected, of course, a lot of courses, you know, such as John, and you can attest to this here in Florida, a lot of golf courses that because of the housing market crash were affected just because of that alone. So it wasn't necessarily about the golf industry. It was just that the housing market took such a hit that people were basically trying to get out from underneath a mountain of debt and was leaving golf courses sort of, you know, running for the hills to figure out how they were going to generate revenue to keep them open. So there was a lot of factors involved. I want to shift gears and Alicia, take a deep breath because I'm coming back to you and we're going back up through the food chain, if you will, from you and Peter and then John. What I want to ask you as well is we see the influx of a lot of different programs to get people into the game. A lot of great junior programs, a lot of great programs in general to get people interested in the game. Again, timing being a factor. What about organizations like Topgolf? What about organizations that parallel that type of theme? The generation that we're dealing with now is not the generation that we're all sort of from, where our parents maybe played golf, maybe we were introduced to golf. Many of the millennials, particularly that are coming in, and some of the younger generations that are coming up, their parents didn't necessarily play golf. So the kids were not exposed at an early age. Are some of these organizations, and I'm just using Topgolf as an example, are they helping, do you think, introduce people to the game, and then hopefully some will transition into actually getting out there and playing on a golf course or taking lessons? Or are they hurting or changing the way golf is looked at too much? What are your thoughts there, Alicia?
I honestly don't think it could hurt. I really feel like if anybody's like engaging somebody in golf, whether they're you know, the young professionals that just want to take a couple hours and they want to have fun and go to Topgolf, and I just, you know, they could have enough fun where they decide they want to go to a local tournament like here in Columbus and go to the Memorial Tournament and be a spectator. I don't think it could hurt at all. Anytime that there's something going on with golf, I think it's generating something, whether it's, you know, a percentage of those will get interested and just take off and become a member at a club. We don't know that, but some could. And so I don't know if it could hurt at all if there was something like that. I mean, I had somebody walk into my golf center last week and or last month, excuse me, and they were from the YMCA, and they were asking
right.
if I would donate something. So I donated something a couple hours in the simulator, you know, assuming there would be a, you know, in the fundraiser. And so, you know, that was, they were very grateful for that. And then as we were talking, they said, you know, we have a YMCA camp every summer. And I said, so do you have golf in that? And they said, no. And I said, well, would you be interested in me, you know, with I mean, there's like 1,500 kids that go through this camp. And my head's just
right.
spinning. So I'm saying, well, you know, would you be interested in me? You know, I could have my academy kids help me out, my college kids that come back for the summer. I've got an intern, you know, a girl that's in a junior in college now, and she's going to be a senior next year, and she's coming back to work for me, and she could help with that. And I said, and they're all on board. They said, wow, we never even thought about golf in that whole thing. They're having all sorts of other activities and other sports that are being introduced to these 12 to 1,500 kids during summer camps for YMCA. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to do and generate interest in going to mm-hmm. elementary schools and recruiting for my high school teams and saying, like, you know, I send out a flyer to the parents and say, you know, do your kids play golf or never played golf, don't have clubs? It's okay. We can help you. So it's one of those things where you know, I don't think anytime you're introducing golf to anybody, I think it's always going to help. I think there's something
yeah.
that's going to become good from that.
Yeah, well said, Alicia, and you're exactly right. I think anything that we do that's obviously in a positive light, I think is going to be good to help get people interested to learn, to understand a little bit about golf. Peter, I'm gonna mm-hmm. go to you here and just sort of piggybacking a little bit off of what Alicia was just talking about. You know, you mentioned earlier about at the university, you know, where you're located there, you know, having a lot of these university kids involved and having the opportunity to get involved. I wonder, though, does the industry as a whole, there are so many sports in the school system, and I'm talking about the public school at all levels, that they're exposed to. Golf is not one of them in most cases. Does the industry need to take a hard look at that possibility of, and also YMCA programs, as Alicia just talked about? Do we need to start looking at a more grassroots approach to this instead of just looking at getting in junior programs and getting, you know, new members at courses? Do we need to take a more grassroots approach to this and start getting into the general school system, just introducing people to golf, just getting them not necessarily coming out for lessons or getting into some great long program, but just getting that introduction, getting our foot in the door so that we're part of that day-in, day-out thought process that they're seeing at school, much like football and baseball and many other sports are. What are your thoughts on that, Peter?
I couldn't agree more. Alicia, I applaud you for offering to be available for that YMCA program. That's fabulous. You know, I at a former club, I was very close to the one of the physical education department head for the district what happened to be a member, and she happened to be a golfer, and she came to me and wanted to get the golf into the physical education curriculum but didn't know where to start. So just being a resource, introducing them to, you know, the fact that there are grants at a state level or federal level to purchase the equipment that they need, something like Snag Golf or Birdie Ball or a multitude of other equipment that can scale golf for the younger person to give them that immediate level of success that, like you said, the younger generation is desiring. We have a junior clinic that we run for ages 4 to 8, 10 in that area, but it's primarily there to introduce the children to golf, and we rarely use golf balls. I use Birdie Ball quite a bit. For those listening that aren't familiar with that, it's a hollow cylinder that the child is hitting a club that is scaled for them. It's it's shorter, it's lighter, the club face is 300% larger than a normal club face, and they're hitting off a piece of hard plastic. So they can make contact with that piece of plastic pretty much as far back as a foot behind the ball, and the club is going to skip into the cylinder, and they're going to see that cylinder fly just as though it was a golf ball. And they're going to give the child a lot more room for error and see that immediate gratification that, Ted, that you're kind of touching on. I the more we can engage that younger age, that sampling age, and get it into the physical education curriculum. But the teachers and the administrators need to feel as though golf is accessible. And that's the one thing that she brought up, is that she never even thought about golf because it seemed so inaccessible to the kids. So why bring it into the curriculum when now the best thing we can do is give them access, give them a place, and you know, kind of just allow them to sample it, because that's why they start playing more basketball, or they're more familiar with football or tennis or whatever it might be, because when they were younger, they tried it in gym or phys ed, whatever you want to call it. So, I mean, and then Ted, just to kind of go back to the question you asked before, while you guys were talking, I'm going on Instagram, and the kids' attention is in their phone, but they're on social all the time. And, you know, Michelle Wheat has 450,000 followers. You know, Jordan has 1.4 million. Ricky has 1.5 million. They're seeing young people that are exactly like themselves doing this, and not only doing it, but they're cool. I mean, they're doing this and they look cool. They're being cool. They're having fun. Your young golf stars right now on social just aren't showing golf things. They're showing them going out. They're dressing up for galas. Like, Michelle's amazing with her style. She shows that. There's a lot of other young ladies that are doing that, young men that are doing that. So I see the fact that their attention is in their phone, because right now on social they have a lot of very good role models or people that are playing golf that are showing how amazing the other side of it, the off the course side of things, can be, and how actually social it really is. So, you know, you can say that the kids are closed off and they're not engaged in golf. Well, I would argue that they are more engaged than ever, but their attention is in a very different place than any generation before. So the older generation is going to definitely see it as a negative because it's not where their own attention is. So I think we're doing a fabulous job on, you know, on the highest level of the player, giving the younger generation a look at what it really is like to play golf, and not, you know, your father, your mother, your grandmother, your grandfather's version of golf. So, sorry, wrong answer. I'll step aside.
No, that's a great perspective, Pete, and you're exactly right. You know, one thing I have to give, you know, props to the golf industry, unlike so many other industries, is, you know, our young stars and even some of our older ambassadors of the game have given such a level of professionalism in both on and off the golf course that they've been able to project a very positive image for the game. You know, Arnold Palmer, who I'm going to be talking about a little bit later on, was a great, you know, a great ambassador to the game. And literally legions of men and women followed, you know, in Arnie's army to be able to see, you know, just what he was going to do next. But just also, you know, he was just a great spokesperson for the game. You know, along came Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and many of the others that followed. Now we're seeing the Jordan Spieth and so on and so on. So, Jonna, my question to you is this, just again, to sort of take off of what Peter was just talking about. You know, we see a lot of these young players and we see a lot of golf professionals on the teaching side of things like yourself, like Peter, like Alicia, like myself. And I'm asking you this question, John, because you're the president of your section. There's a lot of great programs out there that are doing exactly what we've all been talking about, you know, trying to grow the game, getting it in to a different market at a younger and earlier age. But I wonder if maybe a more concerted effort, I'll give you a good example. Kate Tempesta, who many have heard on this show before, lives up in the New York area, through her Urban Golf Academy, introduces a lot of youngsters, not just so much about the fundamentals and things of the golf game itself, but just, you know, getting out there, having fun and engaging with one another while learning about golf along the way. And obviously they're very young. Another one is Nicole Weller out in South Carolina.
Savannah.
Again, a great help. Savannah, Georgia. I'm sorry, Savannah, Georgia. My apologies. Thank you, John. But, you know, doing some great things with junior golf and getting youngsters involved at a very, very early age through some of the programs. And there's, I mean, a million different versions. My question to you, John, is as president of your section, do we need to start reaching out to the other sections and saying, look, we need to start aggressively doing an outreach program to a lot of these different areas that we've talked about here tonight, to maybe the YMCA, maybe to our local school systems, and saying we want to bring golf in, not just to play golf, but to learn about the game itself, kind of like our parents did a little bit for some of us, how they introduce us to the game so that we can then plant that seed and then see where it grows there. Because as Peter just pointed out, the industry is changing. The younger generation are looking in a different direction. You know, when I was raised up, you know, it was all about club membership. It was about belonging to, you know, a great club. The younger generation coming up don't necessarily share that same interest. It's not that they don't want to play the game, but they're looking at it from a different set of through a different set of lenses. What are your thoughts as far as what your section is doing, and maybe should there be a more concerted effort with all of the sections coming together, both LPGA and PGA, and getting out into some sort of a community outreach on a national scale and not just local? What are your thoughts there, John?
Let's start from the top down. From a PGA standpoint of view nationally, from a headquarters standpoint of view, you've got PGA Hope, which is an outreach program, not only to juniors, but to those who maybe can't afford it. It also has a lot to do with reaching out to those who are having a difficult time playing due to whether it be impairment or injury or illness. So there's a lot of that going on from a national level, and there's been numerous discussions I've been a part of at national meetings, committees, that kind of thing, where we talk about all these programs and the delivery of the programs. And what it boils down to is educating local professionals, educating local public, that from a giving standpoint of view, giving starts at the local level and transcends upward. From the upward to down, the trickle down, it's more about educating those about the opportunities that are there. Because every community is different. Peter's going to have a different case scenario than Alicia. Alicia different from mine. Mine different from yours, so yep. on and so forth. So we're going to have different reasons why people play golf. We're also going to have different socioeconomic circumstances on top of the generational attention spans, let's call it, that are going to be unique to every individual locale, whether it's a major metro area such as New York or in Orlando, or it's just an outreach, a bedroom community of Columbus. Everybody's a little bit different. Everybody's got different needs. So the programs that are out there, quite honestly, and I'm not trying to be political so much as I've done a lot of soul searching with this, especially of my business in particular, as to what programs fit my business model and what ones fit the facility where I am. It's here's a list and here's a delivery method of this, and the organizations have gotten better at understanding the support mechanisms needed for the local professional to deliver the program at a local level. When we talk about grassroots, I was watching Jeopardy the other night, and it was a question on Jeopardy and the definition of grassroots. And it sort of remind me that grassroots means literally in your own backyard. What are you doing in your own backyard?
Right.
And that's really where programs are best delivered, where they make the biggest impact. Where, as Alicia said, wow, you taught me, I'm going to bring my kids back. You're fantastic. It was in her backyard. It wasn't on a global set. It wasn't on a regional set. The more we can do from that standpoint of view, from a top-down standpoint of view, to not only educate the professionals, but to educate golfers. And I think we're turning corners that way. We've still got a lot of big corners to turn, but at least we're listening and paying attention. And there is a big difference between hearing and listening. And up until the past 3 or 4 years, all we've been doing is hearing. We're finally sitting down and listening. We're finally sitting down and truly paying attention to what people are telling us about golf. And then realizing, you know, the staunch definitions of golf that we've had in the past, they still apply, but they apply to the person who matriculates in that direction. While at the same time, you see a Golf Channel putting on the show they did from Top Golf in Vegas. It was the most watched show they've had in years. That we can do things like that on a global or on a national level. But we've got to have follow-up and local programs to back up those efforts. If we don't, those programs aren't deliverable, then you've missed the golden opportunity to capitalize on what a bigger organization can do for you. There's bigger organizations are only going to do as much as they can do for the whole. You as the individual, not only as a golfer, but as a coach or a parent, you've got to make that decision in your own backyard as to what's best and what fits your lifestyle. And there's tons and tons of different choices out there now for you to make. It's literally just a matter of having the courage to make the decision to do it. And I use that term very distinctly. It takes a little bit of courage. It takes a little bit of gumption to make the decision, you know what, let's try this out. Let's give it a try. Let's do it on a small scale. Who cares about the rules? Let's just bang it around the yard. Let's do this. Let's do that. That's how we all started somehow. And through all the muck and mire of, I'm going to call it the greed era of, let's see how much we can take from everybody. We forgot the grassroots. We forgot where it all came from.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some great, great thoughts, John. You're exactly right. You know, I've often said here over the last several years since doing this program that I think the model, the golf model as a whole, is changing. And it's like any industry. It can be slow at times. Others, in other parts of it, it can be very quick. And I think that one of the things that I see potentially helping this industry is instead of targeting the individual and getting the individual interested, I wonder if maybe particularly young families that are just sort of starting out, young entrepreneurs that have just, you know, got little kids, haven't gone to, you know, they're not in college, they're not even in high school yet, would it be worth the industry's efforts to target families and getting families out through different golf centers and different you know, maybe through a pilot project, if you will, and getting families. I mean, people want to be able to do things as a family, especially young families, and there are so many activities out there in which they can do that, but golf is not something that really, it's always been sort of programmed as an individual sport. And even though there is a certain amount of truth to that, it doesn't mean that you have to play as an individual. You can certainly play as a family. So I wonder if that might be a little bit different of approach, is maybe to start the targeting families and getting the family involved in some sort of a golf program that is affordable and works well within their budget, if that's something maybe the industry needs to take a little bit harder look at. I don't know. What's your thoughts? Peter, I'm going to let you have the final point on this discussion?
It may be advantageous of us not to have a program. Maybe it's okay. more advantageous of us as a profession to make it accessible, to encourage families to do this together, to educate them to the sense that your four-year-old or you, I have a four-year-old. He loves golf, not because he knows anything about the mechanics or anything. It's fun to do with dad. It's fun to do with mom. It's fun to be out there. It's fun for him to carry his club around. He knows that the ball goes in the hole and that the club hits the ball from watching. But he more so enjoys the time together. I enjoy the time together. It's a ton of fun. But if you don't make the golf course available to that kind of context, that, okay, I'm just going to bring my child or children with me, they're going to have a club. If you're at a place that or the club itself has an attitude of, you know, charging the person so that a young person can just accompany someone playing golf, then there's an access issue there. So, you know, I see it more of, as professionals, we can be really encouraging to our club leadership and our ownership to provide access to the younger people, whether it's if they're in that older age group of high school or college or whatever. If there needs to be a fee, there can be a fee, but don't make it so that it's just inaccessible for them. Because in the long term, they're your members of tomorrow. They're the people you want to fall in love with the place. And when they do have the time and or the disposable income or the desire just to be there, they're going to work to make it happen, just as Alicia's son wants to make it happen. You know, it's no different. So I just think there's, in a general sense, we can provide more access and have a little bit more of a long-term vision of, you know, what it's going to be down the road.
Yeah, I think a great way to close out that segment, Peter, with some great points. I think that, you know, kids will emulate what they see their parents doing. And if their parents are engaged in whether it be a sport or some sort of an activity, they take an interest. They want to be involved. And I think, you know, as John pointed out, that grassroots begins on a much smaller scale. And as you pointed out, Peter, maybe we don't need, per se, another program. We just need to have it more accessible to more people. And you know, Alicia, you've also made some great points as well. I'm going to let you start off as we wrap this up to let the folks know if they want to reach out to you, Alicia, to whether it be get lessons or to learn more about this great game. How can they do that? And if there's anything very quickly that you want to plug, by all means, go ahead.
Well, thank you again for having me on the show. I always like being on here and talking golf, and so I want to thank you personally for that. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can just go to my website, which is www.gratitudegolf.com, and it will have a place where you can email me, and then also I believe there's you can get my book on Amazon. So if you want to read anything about the lessons that golf and life might teach us, you can certainly pick the book up there, and I appreciate, again, being on the show.
Well, Alicia, I'm glad that you're joining us this year on the Coach's Corner panel. You're a great addition to the team, and you've been on, of course, the show as a guest before, but I'm glad you came back to add a little bit more flavor, if you will, throughout some of the discussions to the sea, and I look forward to you coming back on again. Peter, how can the folks, if they want to reach out to you as well, how can they go about doing that?
They can visit my website, which is gogolfcoach.com. They can follow me on Instagram at dailygolfcoach, or on Twitter, I am at dailygolfpro. If they'd like to reach out to me, the website's probably the best way. If you're on Instagram, you can send me a DM. I'm always happy to answer. Any questions, anything I can do to help,
please let me know. But Ted, thanks for having me on again, and it's always a lot of fun.
Well, I appreciate it, Peter. You always bring some very interesting points and perspectives, and I love having all of you guys on here. It's really what makes the show great. And last but not least, John, I'm going to give you a moment or two to let the folks know how they can reach out to you and any final thoughts you want to add.
Sure. First off, Peter, Alicia, pleasure being on the show with you guys. It's always fun to share comments, opinions with other people from around the country, and tonight was no different. And thanks for your thoughts, and appreciate your being on the show with me. It's always fun. I hope to share some more time with you both in the near future. From a contacting me, everything's at John Hughes Golf, whether it's my website, my Twitter, my Facebook, whatever it is. A couple final thoughts that actually tie into what we're talking about. I'm now doing a monthly tip, video tip, that comes out in about 4 minutes socially. So if you want to learn a little something about you and your golf game, you can look for that on social media. And then the third Thursday of every month, I've got a blog tip that comes out. And actually, this month's blog tip is about how to share golf with your family. Some different ideas, some different things for that more traditionalist to get their family involved in a lot of different unique ways. And again, Ted, thanks as always for allowing us to spend some time with you. You're always engaging and very thought-provoking for us all, and we definitely appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys. As always, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you guys giving of your time. I know it's not always easy. Sometimes you're rushing home from the golf course or, in between other events and other commitments. And I know it's not always easy to put this hour aside. So I appreciate the fact that you all do and keep coming back. So everybody have a great weekend, and I look forward to you guys coming back again on the next Coach's Corner panel. Thank you.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. That was my very special guests on the Coach's Corner panel, John Hughes, Peter Agazarian, and Alicia Larson. Did a fantastic job. And this is really just sort of the precursor, if you will, to more discussions we're going to have. The next time I have this discussion, I'm going to have some others throughout the golf industry come on the show, from the manufacturing sector, also from the golf club or golf course industry, just to add some different thoughts and how they're handling some of the adversity, some of the difficulties that the industry has changed and what they're doing to adapt. I think it's important as an industry. As you may recall, if you tuned into last week, my very special guest, Tom Patry, also referenced, some of the things going on in the golf industry. And although he didn't get into great detail, did raise a little bit of an alarm that the industry definitely needs to wake up and that it is and has been going in a direction that may not always work in its best interest. So we need to work together as a team, if you will. And that's one of the reasons I do this show, is it's not just about getting golf tips and learning how to play this great game, but it's also to challenge sort of the status quo and look at some other options and opportunities that we may have to make this game more accessible to other folks out there and overcome some of the challenges and hurdles that we face. All industries have to do this. The golf industry is no different. So great discussion again, guys. Now, I'm very excited this evening to have a very special guest on. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and then as I wait for him to come on board, I will remind you, of course, some of the great ways that you can tune into the show. My very special guest tonight is Chris Rodell. He's an author and writer of a great book called Arnold Palmer, Homespun Stories of the King. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Chris. Chris Rodell is writing has appeared in publications including Sports Illustrated, Esquire, Men's Health, Golf, and, of course, Arnold Palmer's Kingdom Magazine. Of course, each sport has its heroes, those unique talents whose exploits become modern mythology to those who follow in their footsteps. Even as their records fall, these special athletes retain their status as legends. Their names transcend sport as their successes and personalities etch their place in history. Certainly nobody represents this rarefied iconic status more than, of course, the late Arnold Palmer. And in Arnold Palmer, Homespun Stories of the King, put out by Triumph Books, actually coming out May 15th, 2018, which is just next week. Latrobe, Pennsylvania resident and personal friend of Palmer's, Chris Rodell, offers a new take on the legendary figure. Drawing on more than 100 interviews conducted over decades of acquaintance, he delves into Palmer's character away from the game, examining Palmer's relationship to his hometown and many of its residents there in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, which, of course, Arnold is originally hailing from. So as I wait for Chris to come on board on tonight's discussion, I want to just remind everybody, of course, we are live every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Central here on the blogtalkradio.com network. And the best way to find us, of course, is go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive. And you can visit us there front and center on the main page. For some reason, if you're not able to join us live, you can just simply scroll down to the page once you get there, and you'll see the on-demand section. And in the on-demand section, of course, all of the previously aired shows, including tonight's, will be there after it airs in its entirety. The recorded versions you'll find in there in the on-demand section. You can also listen on other social media platforms. You can go to iTunes.com, Stitcher.com, and TuneIn.com. And again, just type in Golf Talk Live, and you will find the show there, and you can listen on those social media platforms. You can also follow me on whether it be Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. Lots of great places to get updates on the show. I post, of course, every week for both of the shows, and I'll tell you about the other one here in just a second. But if you go to my personal Facebook page, and it's under Ted Odorico, and it's O-D-O-R-I-C-O is the correct spelling, you'll see each week I post both of the shows. And also on Golf Talk Live blog on Facebook, if you go to that page, that's the main page for the show, and you'll see it posted there as well as a few other pages on Facebook. But those are the main central pages. You can also, under my personal name on LinkedIn.com, I post every week who's going to be on the show, so you can check it out there. And I also post through Twitter, and the Twitter handle is Ted and Buck CEO, CEO in capital letters. Also, on Tuesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Women of Golf Show on the blogtalkradio.com network is another show that I host and produce alongside with my good friend and co-host, LPGA professional Cindy Miller. And we've had some great winners and players from the Symetra Tour here lately. Again, this season, we're very excited to have them, as well as some other industry types from the golf profession who have come on the Women of Golf Show to really talk about some of the growth opportunities and some of the different things that they're doing. Last week we had, of course, Tammy Fuji, one of the founders and owner of a Kenona Sport, which is a great clothing line that her and her partner put together. So we feature a lot of great entrepreneurs on the Women of Golf Show, as well as many top-ranked players on the Symetra Tour, and we've had some great legends of the game as well stop by over the year. So lots of great things there. So every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can tune into the Women of Golf with LPGA professional Cindy Miller and I as we co-host together and navigate the wonderful world of golf from some of the ladies' perspective. And also Thursday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. Central, of course, you can come right back here and follow me with another great round of Coach's Corner to start things off here on Golf Talk Live, and then another interesting and insightful guest interview to follow. So make sure, two great shows to tune into. You want to mark those down. The links, of course, are on the different social media platforms that I mentioned earlier. But what you can also do is if you go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, you can actually hit the follow button there. And what that will actually do is it will send to your email. You can request it, and it'll actually send you an email reminder when the show is coming on. So if you follow it on that page, that's a great way to get the updates to remind you when the show is coming on. And again, you're not obligated to listen live, but if you do, we're glad you do. And also, I got to always, at the end of the show, I do this, but I'm going to thank this the folks that tune in every week and faithfully support the show. I appreciate it from all around the world. You guys really make it an enjoyable to be able to do this. So thanks, guys. And as I said, I'm just waiting for Chris to come on board, just running a few minutes late. But I will remind you as well that we're going to be doing some more great Coaches Corners. We are going to talk about some other great things as well as instruction and some of the new equipment that's going to be coming out in the years to come, but also some other great professionals, other great programs that are maybe you're not familiar with, some other great books that maybe you haven't heard of as well. Always try to give them some time and that here on the show. So, as I said, I'm just waiting for Chris to come on, and we're going to talk about Arnold Palmer, Homespun Stories of the King, a great book that he wrote, and of course he was had become friends with Arnold Palmer over the years as he moved back in the early 90s into Latrobe, Pennsylvania himself, and developed a relationship, a trusted relationship, and he's going to come on and share some stories about that and talk about his book that's going to be available, and we'll tell you how you can get your hot little hands on that. So again, just to remind everybody, we are live every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central here on the blogtalkradio.com network. So I hope that you'll continue to tune in, and also on Tuesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the blogtalkradio.com network, you can check out The Women of Golf with my good friend and co-host, LPGA professional Cindy Miller. Not sure what the delay is here, so I apologize. We'll hang tight. I will try to find something to fill in a few minutes as I wait for Chris. Hopefully he won't be too much longer. But it actually is, I haven't had a chance, I'll be honest, to read through the book as of yet. I didn't get it until quite recently. I did get a copy of it, but it looks like a great read, and lots of great stories that he shares in here. Some of which you may be familiar with, others you may not. And as I said, when he does come back, when he does come on board here tonight, we will talk about some of the things that he's put in the book here about his good friend, Mr. Arnold Palmer. You know, one of the things that always, and I'm just going to share this very quickly, and while I wait, one of the memories that I have of Arnold Palmer that stands out to me is the fact that not only was he a great champion golfer, that actually, and I don't want to take away from this, he was certainly among the top golfers in the world, but even more so than that, he was just a great humanitarian, just a great, wonderful person. I never had the honor and pleasure of meeting him in person, but just all of the things that I've seen of him do over the years, all the things that I've known about him and watched on television, articles that I've read about Arnold Palmer have been nothing but great things said about him. And it's very easy to see why he was really one of the true ambassadors of the game, and why so many people loved him. I mean, you know, Mr. Palmer, of course, really has transcended decades of this industry, and with not only some exciting golf and was really instrumental in getting golf on television to literally millions of viewers. And of course, we're all familiar with Arnie's Army. He was just an everyday man. He was not certainly coming from really anywhere or any special background. He was just a hardworking man who came from a traditional blue collar family. And he just had a dream and a passion that he wanted to do. And he built a very successful business and just really touched so many people's lives around the world. That always said a lot to me. I was more impressed of how he handled and conducted himself in interviews and just communicating with so many people. You know, when you listen to some of the fans who have had the pleasure of meeting him and or had written to him over the years, and you know, he answered. This was another thing that impressed me. I mean, he stayed after tournaments and made a point of signing autographs literally until the last person left the golf course. Other things that he did as well is, you know, he talked to people, he communicated with people, he, you know, put his arm around, shook their hand, you know, in some cases maybe gave them a hug. And he was just a warm, decent human being, and was really, as I said, one of the true ambassadors of the game, and somebody that maybe isn't familiar with golf. If you want to see what a true professional in the golf industry was, then you need to look no further than Arnold Palmer. Well, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not too sure what's happened with my guest. I'm not sure if he's maybe got the time confused or not, but I will hang out here for a little bit longer and try to entertain you, if you will. And again, I apologize for the delay. I was expecting him to be here a few minutes ago, but he may be running into some difficulty here. So we'll hang tight for a little bit longer, and otherwise we'll have to reschedule him on another show. But anyways, again, let me also remind you that if you're somebody in the golf industry and you'd like to be a guest on the show, a great way to reach out and to get my attention is to send me an email or connect with me on social media. My email address is ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. If you send me an email, and if you're somebody in the golf business, you don't necessarily have to be a golf instructor or a golf coach. Maybe you've written a great book, or maybe you've developed a great product or service that is something that you are looking to help grow the industry or bring more people into this great game. I'd like to share your story here on Golf Talk Live. I've done this with many folks over the years, some seasoned veterans of the game, as well as many new entrepreneurs that have come out with some great products or apps or what have you, and I've shared them with my audience literally around the globe. And there's been lots of interesting, great products, some of which I have my hot little hands on and have tried them out. And they truly are some very unique and interesting and great products. But if you've got a story to share and you want to come on the show, you're welcome to do so. Again, reach out to me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Send me a little bit of information. I will take a look and I'll reach out to you, and we'll see what we can do. I normally try to book out about 2 months in advance, so we're pretty much booked up now through May and most of June. I still think I might have an opening or two in June. But if you're interested in doing that, you can also reach out to me through social media such as Facebook or LinkedIn. If you want to send me a private message and just say, hey, I've been listening to the show, or I've heard about your show and I'm interested in maybe being a guest at some point, by all means, feel free to reach out, and I'll be more than happy to see if I can fit you in the schedule. So as I said, I'm glad that you're tuning in tonight, and I apologize profusely. I'm not sure what's happened to Chris, but I'll give a few more moments here, and if he's not able to get in here in the next little bit, then we'll close off the segment, and I will try to reschedule him at another date. I've had some great guests. Let me just tell you about some of the guests that I've had on the show that I've enjoyed. Certainly all of my guests, but certain ones, of course, always stand out a little more than others for various reasons. One guest I'm very honored and very proud to have had the opportunity to feature on my show, of course, is the legendary Billy Casper. And one of the reasons, really there's a couple of reasons. He was obviously one of the first really big names that I had on the show. So I was very honored and very proud to be able to get him. But he, much like Mr. Palmer, he was a very humble individual, very giving of his time, and we enjoyed some great discussion both on and off the program. I spoke to him actually a week out from the program. We talked for about an hour or so, just sort of a get-to-know, if you will. And he was just really very humble, as I said, and willing to give of his time. And I know that he enjoyed himself tremendously when he came on the program, and he was just a great guest and had some interesting stories. And I know from not only conversations with him, but also his son, which I'm going to mention in a minute, that he really enjoyed it and enjoyed particularly having many of the folks call in. There were a number of callers that night, I think roughly close to a dozen particular night. And he just loved, you know, answering their questions, and you know, he had been around the game and done so much to you know, give back to the game, which a lot of these you know, golf professionals do. So it was a very honor to have him on. Also, his son Byron Casper, we've become very good friends as a result of that initial interview, And Byron, of course, comes on many, many times throughout the year for different things, whether it be promoting some events or things, as he recently did here a few weeks back. Talked about, of course, his father's tournament that comes on every year in the first Monday of May, which actually just happened this past Monday. And as I understand, another great successful event. And of course, it raises funds for his charity, Billy's Kids. And it's just was a great cause, both near and dear to his heart, but also his wife who precedes him, of course, Shirley Casper, and of course the Casper family. So Byron was somebody that I enjoy having on. We have some interesting late night chats about different things, but obviously somehow we revolve back to golf. But anyways, it's some interesting discussions on and off. And of course, a lot of the great coaches, John Hughes, who was on tonight, Peter Egazarian. John has been on the show, one of the early Coaches Corner panelists and special guests who's been on here. And John always does a phenomenal job in the discussions and always brings his best and then some, and always willing to give of his time, and just a great professional. And so you want to make sure that you reach out to him, and it's johnhughesgolf.com. He's got some great tips coming out, as he said, as we closed off that segment. So make sure you check out johnhughesgolf.com. And if you're going to be in the Orlando area, you might want to stop by. So reach out to him through his website, and maybe he's got a lesson or two in mind that can help your game. So make sure you check him out. Peter Egazarian, of course, another great golf professional. And, of course, Alicia Larson had been on the show as well, both this show and the Women of Golf, and had a great time discussing many things with her, and always brings her best along the way too. And I'm glad to have her part of the Coach's Corner panel this season. So I hope she'll continue to do that each and every year. And just a lot of great folks. Nicole Weller, I mentioned earlier, just doing so many great things for junior golf, really that grassroots level, just trying to get some of these youngsters at a very, very early age exposed to the game and involved out in Savannah, Georgia. I don't know why I thought South Carolina, but Savannah, Georgia. So a lot of great things happening in her neck of the woods. Tom Patry, who was on last week, of course, another seasoned veteran, much like John, been around the game for 30-plus years, and just always does so much to support and help out. And there's really just so many others. Barry Goldstein, of course, who's been on the show, a great golf professional as well in South Florida, and his daughter, Carly Goldstein, of course, who graduated just not this year, but the previous year from LSU, played on the women's golf team and did very well, not only in college, but has won over 102, I believe, different golf titles, including national championships, not only here in the United States, but around the globe. She's played, and just a phenomenal junior player. And now a young lady who graduated from LSU, and she's going to conquer the world, I think, on the LPGA. So I'm interested to see what happens there. But he did a phenomenal job in raising her, along with his other daughter, of course, Aubrey. Barry's a great professional, very, down-home sort of individual, but very knowledgeable about the game, and always willing to offer his fellow professionals and others out there. He's done a lot of great things as well. So I'm honored to have Barry on the show. So many other great Coach's Corner panelists as well. Pete Buchanan, I want to give a great shout out. Let me just tell you something very quickly about that. Pete, of course, was on Coach's Corner last week, and I alluded to getting one of his simple swing repeaters that he has at his company Plain Simple Golf. Well, lo and behold, did I not get one in the mail along with the accompanying DVD on how to use it properly and that. But it's a great training device. So go to plainsimplegolf.com and order yours today. It's very, very well put together. It's a great training device. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. I want you to go to his website, plainsimplegolf.com, and take a look. Some great videos on there and showing you on what it can do. But you definitely want to order it. So thank you very much, Pete. I haven't had a chance to, other than take it out of the box and look at it. I'm going to watch the DVD this weekend, and I'm going to try and get a little bit of practice with it just to check it out. But I know it's a great and well put together training device. So thank you, Pete, for doing that. Also, want to thank some of the other great professionals very quickly who have been on the show as well. A lot of great, great golf professionals. James Kyle. I mean, there's just so many. Tom Stickney has been on the show. Chuck Evans, who's been on the show on the Coach's Corner panel. All of these guys, each and every week, bring their best out on the golf course as they help their students. And throughout the season, I have many of these guys and gals on the show on the Coach's Corner panel. All of them, or most of them, have been guests as well. Jamie Leno Zimron, of course, wasn't able to join us on the last one, but always brings her best, always has some interesting and fun things to do. So there's a lot of great other fellow professionals out there. And, of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my good friend and co-host of the Women of Golf show, LPGA professional Cindy Miller, truly one of the hardest working women that I can tell, that is able to just do some amazing things, and very honored to have her on the show and co-hosting the Women of Golf show. Many, many more. I will do my best on time to give them their proper due. But I think what I'm going to do, ladies and gentlemen, I guess there's run into a problem with the guest tonight. I will do my best to get him back on another show, and we'll have to reschedule that. But I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of the listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each and every week. And it really is, along with many of the highly talented coaches, teacher professionals, authors, and entrepreneurs that stop by, it's really through their participation and guest appearances that have helped to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. So I want to thank all of you first and foremost. And again, my apologies to those of you that were tuning in to see Chris Rodell and hear him talk about his new book, Arnold Palmer, Homespun Stories of the King. We will have to reschedule that and get him back on the show on another date, and we'll see when we can make that happen. But on that note, have a great week, everybody. I will not be doing a show next week, as I'm going to be heading out of town for an extended stay, and just will not have time to do. So I'm going to be canceling next week's show, but I will be on the following show the following week, which I don't have the date in front of me. So next Thursday, there will be Tuesday, the Women of Golf show will air this coming Tuesday, which I believe is the 15th, but next Thursday, which would be the 17th, there will not be a Golf Talk Live. So if you're planning on coming in next or joining me next week live, don't worry, I won't be here, but you can visit the link anyways, blogtalkradio.com/Golf Talk Live, and you can listen to some of the great previously aired shows. Maybe you've missed a few, or maybe there's one that you've heard before and you want to dial in and listen again a little bit. So by all means, feel free to do that in the on-demand section. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, God bless everybody. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next time right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless. Bye-bye.